I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast and Ringer SC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you? What have you done?
I'm just happy to see you, Ryan.
No, don't lie to me. Listen, you forget how long I know you. I know when you're lying.
That's true. Yeah, so very happy. A bit of personal news. So interviewed Bukayo Saka, the great Bukayo Saka, for British GQ Style. He's on the cover and it was a joy to speak with him. Really lovely. And another highlight, a personal highlight of the week. Went for a walk through North London and bumped into Jeremy, a Stadio listener.
Which what is a this? Real... I think it's just, you're just trolling me right now. Hi, Jeremy, Stadio listener.
I was in North London with the Metropolitan Leeds and there he was.
Oh my God.
So he said hello. He said, oh, can you have a shout out? I was like, of course you can. There you go. Thank you, Jeremy.
Could we a quick shout out to Mark Wallace and Bina Cromer?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah,
we had the first ever Stadio fan meetup in Glasgow. Bina was traveling there looking for tickets for a game and we retweeted it from the Stadio account and her and Mark connected for a beer, which is lovely. And they sent us a photo.
Yeah, absolutely lovely.
How nice.
You know, they're going to get hell because they're going to be like, what other people might be like, we've had Stadio meetups before, but they were the first to brand it. They were the first to market it.
I know.
It's the first one.
Brian Eno taking the credit for ambient music. He actually spent 6 months in the sticks with Cluster, cutting tree logs. And see, we all know, those who know. The thing that terrifies me about that, though, is that imagine what they were talking about.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, God. All of the ways that they disagree with our nonsense.
Don't worry, they can't find us.
Oh, dear. All right. So let's do some quick admin. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Obviously, yes. Getting vaccinated if you can, getting that booster if you can. Obviously, anyone affected by what's going on at the moment around the world, we hope you're all hanging in there. If you hear any background noise, there's some construction going on very, very close to where I'm at. So apologies if you hear the odd noise.
And to be honest, in a sense, which of us humans is not under construction?
Under construction?
Exactly.
Oh, wow. There you go. You mentioned the Bukayo Saka thing. Go and read that now on British GQ.
Oh, thank you.
For anyone who hasn't read it, it's a great read. We posted it from the Stadio accounts and Musa posted it from his.
Thanks very much, dude.
Hey, pleasure, man. I've been, you know, we've been having chats about it. I'm just glad it's out there to read. Oh. Make sure you check theringer.com. Some great stuff going up at the moment. Righty's House this week. It's an interview with Jill Roard, former Arsenal player, currently playing for Wolfsburg. She spoke to Ian and Flo about the move to Wolfsburg. Obviously, they're about to play Barcelona in the Champions League at Camp Nou again, another sellout. So she was talking a bit about that. It's a really cool chat. They were also going to talk about Leah Williamson being named England captain ahead of the Euros. So yeah, that'll be up on Wednesday on the Ringer FC feed. And obviously, if you do listen to us on a podcast app that allows you to rate and review, please do so. Be very kind. Finally, Stadio Outros plays on Spotify. All the music we play out on each episode, newest ones at the top, just search for Stadio Outros on Spotify. And that's all the admin. So today, we're going to be very Premier League focused today because there was a lot of stuff happened this weekend in the Premier League that was pretty seismic, from the Champions League race to the top four race and for the relegation battles. So we'll probably spend most of the time at the top of the table, but we'll do obviously cover some stuff down the bottom as well. And then we'll just mention a couple of other things that caught our eye this weekend. So let's get into it after this. All right, man, let's begin in the Premier League.
Yes.
Because it was the top of the table clash, the big rivalry.
I know you're going to say. I know it's so obvious.
What am I going to say?
Norwich Burnley.
No, actually, not top of the table. Obviously, we're talking about Manchester City 2, Liverpool 2 at the Etihad on Sunday afternoon. I thought this was quite an interesting game compared to some of the fixtures that these two have played recently. Liverpool in the opening stages were quite poor in certain aspects.
See, I wonder about that. I wonder, because I was watching this and I was thinking, are Liverpool poor, or it is a nightmare trying to force the ball through certain gaps?
Mm.
Like, I went to Nottingham Forest. I was very privileged to go to Nottingham Forest, Birmingham City, at the City Ground the weekend. And it was funny because in the first half, anyone that's watched Birmingham, the Birmingham, like, that is a very Lee Bowyer team. They shut down all the space between gaps, and Forest could not play the ball on the turn into the gaps, and they just clamped everything down. And you saw some mistakes because they couldn't play that pass into feet. Like, they were really struggling from the fullbacks to hammer the ball into feet. And you saw Trent Alexander-Arnold, and he was trying to play ball on the line, but they clamped down the line. They know that he likes that ball. So they're basically pairing up in the channels on the lines. And so he was having to come in field and pass it in field. And he really struggled with that. And I was like, yes, that's poor execution, but also how well are City screening? Like, the intensity City started with completely forced Liverpool off. And it looked poor, but also that someone mentioned, like, you know, they're targeting Thiago at the base of the playmaking function. And I was like, well, maybe they are. And it's like, I'm always, when I see a top team failing to execute, I'm always like, this looks bad, but is this also because, it's about when you see a gust of wind blowing a cyclist off a bike, you're like, haha, oh, he fell off his bike. Well, you wouldn't laugh. Well, if you had a grim sense of humor, but like, that must've been a strong gust of wind. And I think that Liverpool, I think the opening gust of wind from City was ferocious, actually.
Yeah, I think that just made the early stages of the game really interesting, because Liverpool, by their extremely high standards, were probably a lot poorer than they would have hoped to be in the opening stages against City. But then they were a goal in it. They were back in it after pretty much their first meaningful attack.
Mm.
And likewise, in the early stages of the second half, where Liverpool got the second equaliser, City were quite poor for those opening few moments. And it was almost like the sides had, like, switched.
Reversed.
I was like, we've been watching Moon Knight, right? And it was like both sides had a little bit of Stephen Grant and a little bit of Mark Spector in equal measure.
Yes.
It was, you know, sometimes they were like Mark Spector in the suit. Sometimes they were like Stephen Grant in the suit.
Yeah, ruthlessness and chaos.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And but I think that's because of the, you know, just the intensity of the fixture and how important it is. And also just two absolutely elite sides. When either of these sides look a little bit more normal, it looks worse than it actually is, because they're up against just elite machines.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like, when you look at a player failing to execute, a player struggling, you have to always ask yourself, what are they being confronted with? You saw it with Gary Neville, and then you're like, oh, why is he struggling? Why is Beckham struggling? And then you're like, oh, it's Roberto Carlos. Like, and actually, the first half, Kyle Walker had an outstanding first half.
I saw your tweet about this.
Just looking back, and like, since 2017, that man's been there 140 league games almost, and he has just allowed Pep to just not worry about that flank. And it's very easy to forget his impact. But before, you know, when Pep first got there, he didn't have the fullbacks he wanted. He had, I think, Sanya was there. Very good player, but not what... He didn't give you the extra 15 yards you need, like that intensity. And Kyle Walker has just allowed Pep to just plan other parts of the pitch. I put Kyle there and lock down the rest. And he really, really, like, you know, he put Robertson on his heels in a way you don't really often see happen to Robertson. Like, Robertson, just an elite fullback. And the thing about him most impressive is his consistency. And then Bernardo Silva, like, Kevin De Bruyne will get the headlines, and he's Kevin De Bruyne, so he's going to get that. But the thing that Bernardo Silva does, the ability to just take control of the ball and then just hold possession in the center circle. Like, he does it so easily that you have to almost, like, check yourself. There's a moment he gets the ball in the first half and he takes possession, and he just holds it for like 5 or 6 seconds before laying it off to, I think, a center back or a fellow midfielder. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, that is like exceptionally difficult. Like, the game is going off and he just gets and takes the heat out of it. Later on, late in the game, he's back in the center back position, pointing and directing play. And then a few minutes later, he's like cutting through the final third and winning a free kick. And this was just, we saw the Bernardo Silva performance in the 2-1 that we talk about all the time, one of the great games you've seen in the Premier League, City-Liverpool, City 2, Liverpool 1. This was almost of the same quality in terms of a performance. That was still the stellar performance, the definitive Bernardo Silva performance. But he was not far behind that, I think, at the weekend.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I really like him when he drops into those deeper roles.
Love it, yeah.
He does it with such a guile that I think he almost goes unnoticed.
Yes, yes, very much so, yeah.
Some of the best centre midfield performances are the ones that you don't even recall them after the game, because they've just kept things ticking over. and they've allowed the other people to do the damage. And that is such an important thing. It's a very underrated trait of centre midfield play or midfield
that's
play in general.
That's what Rodri's become. Rodri's become that. Yeah. After a difficult start, he's become that.
De Bruyne is obviously incredible, and I think he was probably... Who got man of the match?
De Bruyne got it, I think. But there's a funny thing going on where
Can
I be honest? I've noticed that a few times watching De Bruyne, and this is not his fault because he's amazing. There's a couple of times I've seen stuff and I'm like, that's actually not as good. And I say it in jest. I loved it. It's not a dig on him. But there was one moment he gets the ball and it's like, look at the vision from De Bruyne. And he gets the ball on the right flank, Ryan. And there's like two players running ahead of him. And he just does what you'd normally, he just bends across.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a normal thing. And I'm like, I almost wish he had like an in-ear, like earpiece. He could stop the game and be like, hang on guys, it's not that deep.
Was it that game recently against Palace? Was it Palace away when De Bruyne hit that cross and someone on commentary, I can't remember who it was, but they were like, that's the pass of the season from De Bruyne. I think I said in the Writers' House group, like the pass of the season in the Premier League should never be something that I've done in the Berlin Kreisliga. It should never be that. Anyway, De Bruyne opened the scoring with a massively deflected shot, but it was so thoroughly deserved. City in that opening stint were so good. My gut feeling coming into the game, weirdly, was that if anyone was going to come out of the blocks that quick in the opening period, it would have been Liverpool. I don't know why my gut was expecting that. And I think the fact that it was City and they were so good and they were so smothering, they really, really penned Liverpool in.
I think Liverpool were taken aback by all of it. Like, not overwhelmed overall. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, the way the force with which City tore into them is, this is the thing. And it wasn't just about the individual. This is the thing about the passing, right? If you said, like, name the pass of the game for City, it kind of wasn't like that. It was more about the combination play. Mm. There was one point where I think De Bruyne played it into Bernardo Silva's feet, who then plays like an angled pass. And it's all like, it's just like two passes and they're just 10 yards each. But it opened up everything. Mm. It was so small, but it was the speed of the combination. And Liverpool just couldn't get tight to that. They just couldn't get tight to it. This is the thing. This is what happens when you effectively play with a front six, where everyone is just weaving, combining. Foden again, just superb, so elusive. Sterling's movement, just great. Like, very unfortunate not to end up with a goal. Could have scored very early on, had another goal to stand for offside. And Gabriel Jesus basically looking like the early Gabriel Jesus at City, like the striker, like the finisher, not just the press, but the striker.
Yeah, there were a couple of moments that I think he could have done better with, if I'm being hypercritical. A couple of maybe wrong options that he chose to shoot where players were in better options. And
I think his
inclusion was a little bit of a curveball, probably the biggest curveball in terms of the team selection from both sides. And it just, I'm not criticising him in any way, really. I just think it's that quite natural for him to be picked as the starting central striker in a game of that magnitude. I think he was just very, very keen to impress. Mm. But I still think he played really well, actually.
Oh, yeah, I thought so too.
But there were just a couple of options. I think City was strange because I think at halftime I tweeted that both managers are probably going to be quite furious at halftime, even though City went in the lead. It was one of those, like, I was looking back afterwards and the first half XG was really interesting because it felt like City had actually created more clear-cut opportunities than they actually had.
I thought so, yeah.
They really felt like they had Liverpool firmly on the back foot for large parts of that first half, but I think a lot of that was territorial. In terms of actual clear-cut chances, I mean, Alisson made a couple of really, really good saves, but it wasn't as much of a battering in an XG sense, for example, like an actual clear-cut opportunity sense, as it maybe felt like it had been. Mm. And I think once Liverpool hung in the game with them at half-time and Klopp got them back in the dressing room, I mean, they were out super early in the second half as well. You can just imagine the kind of team talk.
I think actually, weird enough, Klopp, when they scored their goal, which was beautiful, beautifully worked by Diogo Jota, when I saw that, I actually thought to myself, I'm really glad that wasn't, for Liverpool's sake, a world-class goal, like from 30 yards, because that would have given them no clues as to how to actually break City down. Like, you'd much rather concede, like, a 35-yard screamer than the goal that they conceded to them, because that's actually worrying for City. People know that you can be undone in a switch. People know you can be done in a switch, then that becomes a blueprint. Then it becomes a question of, okay, make the centre-backs turn their heads, cut at the far post, come back across. You've got options there. And when I saw that, it was weird because I remember thinking, oh, why don't Liverpool use that more in the first half? Why aren't you using the switch more? Well, they were under attack. But to come out in the second half and be doing that, really stretching the play, which is what Thiago excels at, you saw a difference after that point. Once Liverpool were like, okay, we're just going to move the ball around more, because I think they almost got a bit, how do I say this? They almost got a bit hypnotized.
Mm.
And I say this not to suspect Liverpool, because this is what Sir Alex Ferguson said about Barcelona. He said, you get caught in the passing carousel. Mm. That's the danger. If you're not careful, you get caught in the passing carousel, Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, and then like, it's also bewitching, and then you lose your own rhythm. And I think Liverpool, to an extent in the first half, got slightly hypnotized.
Mm.
They came out in the second half and they imposed themselves.
Far better.
And that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking they almost needed that break in play to really like impose yourselves, force City out of a rhythm, and then start showing your ruthlessness. And it's no coincidence then that Salah started coming into his own more. And I had a chat with some friends at halftime. They're like, oh, like Salah and Mane need to get more involved. And I said, but the problem with that is if you come deep, then where's the outlet ball?
Mm.
You sit deep against City. And to be honest, I actually really like their discipline in staying high in the first half, because if they had come deep, I think City would have absolutely overwhelmed them.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it against Atleti last week. It takes one moment for them to undo you.
Yeah.
I think even though Liverpool were a little bit more wobbly than Klopp would have loved them to be in the first half, I still think going in just a goal down at halftime, and like I say, their actual penalty box defending wasn't actually that bad. You know, City had a lot of it around it, but a lot of the chances they created weren't super, super clear cut. But the goals that they scored, you know, even De Bruyne
Matip was strong too, yeah.
Matip was great. I think Matip's been in really, really good form for a while. Yeah. That partnership between him and Van Dijk, especially if you think like Konate's come in this season, and we absolutely assumed that that would be the pairing, Konate and Van Dijk.
Yeah.
Matip deserves a huge amount of credit for kind of locking down that second centre-back place. But in terms of the goals, bar De Bruyne's deflection, obviously, all three of them were created with really, really beautiful assists. Like the awareness and the calmness of Trent Alexander-Arnold to lay that off for Diogo Jota in the first half, I thought was so good.
Loved it.
Cancelo's ball for Gabriel Jesus was chef's kissable.
Oh my God. And the finish too.
Finish was so good.
To guide under the crossbar like that. Yeah.
But then Salah's for Mane was such a great pass as well. And right at the very end, De Bruyne had that amazing through ball from Mahrez, who I thought was good when he came on. He hit the post with that free kick. That was a really, really good effort.
That's unbelievable. That free kick.
Good. Yeah.
It was not a really good piece of defending as well, though, from the Mahrez chance from the De Bruyne.
But he looks to kind of like do this, just guide it over Alisson, and there is a deflection on it that takes it further over the bar.
But he tries to finesse it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. But as soon as that ball went through to him, I thought, here we go. The trademark Mahrez, whip it into the far post. This is the winner.
What's the analogy you drew? Yeah, you drew this great analogy, didn't you? You're like,
it's like rich people using 100 euro bottles of wine as cooking wine.
Yeah.
You can't disrespect the pass like that. You have to savor it. You have to savor every drop of those passes.
You know, I love that you mentioned this, because Kevin De Bruyne is passing, and we've talked about this 1,000 times, but I want to mention it again. So where I grew up in my sort of hometown, like suburbs of London, we had those like bowling greens, right? And that was we had so much respect for the old people that played in the bowling greens that we would never play football on them, right? We'd never. And they were the nicest grass anywhere. And all the kids wanted to play five-a-side there, but you never did, even though they were gorgeous places to like run around on. And the way that De Bruyne passes, it's like watching those old people, like old folk, rolling, like playing on the bowling green. There's a way that the ball holds up, and they'll know what I'm talking about when they rewatch it, anyone that saw the game. There's a way that a Kevin De Bruyne pass holds up on the turf with that little bit of backspin. It's like, so it's rolling forwards, but it's also like decelerating all the time. It's like stunning. And he knows exactly, it's just the touch. And I've said this 1,000 times, but there is something pretty wondrous about getting that level of timing and what's the word? It's poise.
Mm.
In a game like that, right? So much chaos, and then just that poise where you're like setting the table. And I saw that and thought, you know, like obviously we've talked a lot about City not having a conventional nine in that sense. When they get one, whoever they buy is going to absolutely feast, Ryan.
Oh my God, yeah.
They're going to feast, because the dirty secret is this shouldn't have been 2-2 actually. With finishing of a truly exceptional level, with finishing of, let's say, an Aubameyang, the form he's in now, for example, at Barcelona, with finishing like that, this is 4-2. And De Bruyne said it. He was like, actually, with the chances we created, we should have scored more. I think the XG is lower than expected because those are the chances that elite strikers finish really quite easily in games like these. And I'm not going to keep hammering City for not having that elite striker, because we know that there were good reasons they didn't get one. But just watching De Bruyne's passing, I was thinking, nah, this should have been 3 points.
I think, but also I think Liverpool could have added another, at least. I think based on purely the performance in the game and how the game played out, I think obviously City will be more disappointed with the, especially being at home as well. I think for Liverpool, yes, Klopp had that amazing quote after the game where he said, you know, we have to win all of the games. This is the one that we could draw.
Yes, yes, yes.
While it's still advantage City in the title race because of that point gap, I think Pep will be the more disappointed out of the two. Because this was such a good chance to create a buffer. But we haven't touched on Raheem Sterling's offside goal.
Yeah.
Spiritually onside.
Oh. Yes.
When your feet are onside, you're spiritually onside. That's the rule. Yes, Sorry, I don't make the rules up.
The sad thing is, he did everything absolutely right.
Yeah, I really don't like when the shoulders are given offside. When both of your feet are onside, and the only reason you're offside is because you are going in a direction. Does that make sense? But you're actually planted.
I just thought for his general performance, his performance deserved a goal.
Yeah.
I was sad for him. And this would have, and it felt like a goal then. It would have been, what, 65, 68 minutes? See, at that point, if they get that, they get another one. The way they were playing at that point, once they kind of regain control of midfield, they had that period in the kind of second half leading towards Sterling's goal, I just felt that was, they get this one, they could conceivably get another before the close.
So 2-2, still a point at the top, 7 games to go.
Liverpool's running is much worse.
It is tougher, yeah.
It's emotional, technical, it's just a tougher running for several reasons.
If it goes down to the final day, Liverpool host Wolves, City host Villa. Yeah, what a fixture. Anything else you want to touch on this game?
No.
A couple of red cards should have happened, maybe.
No further notes.
There were a couple of absolute crunching tackles in this game that could have been a little bit more harshly punished.
Some cheeky tactical fouls. But no, I think, can I just say, actually, shout out to Anthony Taylor. I thought he refereed this really well.
Yeah, I thought he did all right. Yeah.
I just thought there was a lot of chat before about people concerned about how the game would go. But I think in terms of the flow of the game, that is a tribute to how well he controlled that to flow. So yeah, I just want to say that, because refs don't often get shout out, so I'd like to give one.
Let's take a quick break.
Let's do it.
All right, man, before we move on to the race for the final top four place, let's talk about Chelsea quickly, because they put a real, I wouldn't say this was a marker, but this was a really, really impressive response to what's been a tricky week for Chelsea. Beating Southampton 6-0 away. After the Real Madrid game in the week, Tuchel was super unhappy afterwards. And he said that quote that we mentioned on the podcast about having to regroup and focus and process for Southampton, because if they played that way against Southampton, they would lose, let alone in the Bernabeu. Keeping a clean sheet for a start, but also being slightly disappointed it was only 6 is such a kind of like sit down result. You know, the sit down results with what's happened with Chelsea, and obviously we tipped them towards the end of last season and early on in the season, especially when they signed Romelu Lukaku. We really, really thought that they would be a push for the title under Tuchel.
Yeah, and I think should have been.
You could see fans of opposition clubs taking real glee in their struggles over the last week or so. I think this was one of those sit down results. There is a specific type of result when that kind of momentum is building against you and you're just like, sit down.
This is actually my favourite Chelsea front three. It has the best fit. They have the best chemistry, these three. Havertz, Werner and Mount. I've said this before 1,000 times. They all keep out of each other's way.
Yeah.
No coincidence. This is the three that was on the field when they scored the winner for the Champions League final. It's just the way they combine, Ryan. They're not the individually most gifted, all of them, by themselves, in terms of, like, you know, you might say that Mount has got hasn't got as quick feet as Pulisic or whatever, but they are, as in terms of their chemistry, this is my favorite Chelsea front three, because they all just do different things. Havertz disappears, like tall guy who disappears in the 6-yard box. That's essential. Mount, master of the late run. Werner, master of the early run. Like, they just all combine so well. And this is the concern for Lukaku and Pulisic and Ziyech, because that's almost like your go-to, I think. That front three can generate real goals. And I will say for Southampton, poor Southampton, they seem to absorb a disproportionate amount of other teams' statement victories.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, Southampton are a team that, like, they're obviously, like, very, very good and very well coached, but I think the problem they have is when the individual quality, and this is not a dig at Southampton, this is about money and resources, when the individual quality of Chelsea is in warp drive like this, you can't stop that. It's no coincidence as well that this team features my favourite midfield pairing for Chelsea, Kante Kovacic, the two players that drive forward and absolutely shatter pretty much any press in world football. So you've got...
And Kante's been on a bit of a tricky run of form, and I thought he was much better in this game, actually.
Yeah. He has been in a tough
Obviously,
one.
Obviously, one of many players who are fasting currently as well.
Isn't it weird to see that, you know, the concept of Kante having any kind of struggle? I mean, for Kante to struggle, it's basically like a 7.5 as opposed to an 8.5, 9. But yeah, that combination is really, really strong for Chelsea, and just a great victory. And I see a win like this, and I think it makes me think what might have been for them.
Yeah, I really liked Mason Mount turning up with a new fuck around and find out haircut.
Yeah, and I see that.
Because he was really leaning into the potential, like, shampoo advert hairstyle for a while. And he's come back and he's just like, no. It's time to get goals and assists. This is a strictly goals and assists haircut from Mason Mount.
Someone we were talking to was saying, I can't remember who it was, I was talking to them the other day, and they were like, they mentioned about Mason Mount having had a season that was perhaps below expectations or his expectations, which, you know, is saying a lot because the season he had last year was just unbelievable. But, you know, every player goes through some kind of dip. But I think him and that front three, it just gives you that pressing intensity. And this almost felt like a little bit of a throwback to Chelsea early season before teams really started coming at them.
Mount looking like he was having a really lovely time again. Obviously, two goals and assists for him. Two goals for Timo Werner,
who was outstanding.
Timo Werner was absolutely brilliant in this game, and he hit each part of the goal, including he hit the left post, the right post, and the bar.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting what you say about this, because I think he gets so much stick for not scoring as many as he did at Leipzig. But how busy is it? He is, and his work rate is always so key when he's in that Chelsea side. He gives you so much off the ball or away from actual finishing.
Must be Pep's least favourite attacker.
He's busy. Pep, I mean, there was a reason why Klopp was looking at him for Liverpool. Put it that way, you know, before the Chelsea signing. He just seems to be like such a really good squad player.
Yes.
You never really hear anything about him moaning about playing time or not scoring as many as he'd like. He just kind of gets his head down and works.
This is from last year. Pep talking about Chelsea. When Chelsea have the ball, it's difficult to control them because of their players who are so close together. Mm. The holding midfielders move perfectly with each other, and at the same time, they make the pitch so wide with wingbacks and so deep with the movement of Werner. Specifically, he's the only player that he mentioned in that whole configuration. So that's what he does. He stretches the play in a way that is exceptional. Like, his movement is world class.
Speaking of win backs, I thought the inclusion of Ruben Loftus-Cheek was quite interesting, and I thought he played really well.
Yeah,
actually, Tuchel did a really good job here. This was kind of like the perfect weekend for Chelsea in a way, because clean sheet after leaking a quarter of the season's goals that Edouard Mendy had conceded this season happened in the last week or the two fixtures before. Absolutely swatting away aside. And also having a little bit of rotation in there as well for the coming Champions League game.
Really great, yeah.
I know Southampton have been prone to have the occasional, let's say, big defeat, and they are on a poor run of form. They haven't won a game since they beat West Ham at the beginning of March in the FA Cup and then beat Norwich. And they've not had a league win since the 5th of February, Southampton. So they are on a poor run of form. But still, that is just a very business-like, like I said, sit-down performance from Chelsea.
Very much so, yeah.
Quickly also in the Premier League, great result for Leeds, beating Watford 3-0 on Saturday. Brentford with another great result, this time against West Ham, beating West Ham 2-0 at home. They're safe, aren't they? They're not going.
Which is amazing.
It is amazing. Leicester beating Palace 2-1. Wilf Zaha with two missed penalties and then got the rebound.
That is going to be a trivia question at some point.
So weird. Yeah.
The man that missed a penalty twice and still scored.
A very weird week for Burnley. They lost 2-0 to Norwich. Let's talk about the top four race, because I mean, to be honest, West Ham were in that top four race as well. I think out of that pack of sides below Chelsea, I think just the way that the points are kind of starting, they've played a couple of games more, I think they're probably the least likely to get it.
Mm.
So let's talk about Spurs first. This was, again, another a super impressive win for Spurs, especially because Villa in that first half were absolutely incredible.
Really came at them.
They really did. Like, I think Gerrard said it after the game, that he said it was the first time in football that he's been behind at the break, but immensely proud.
Mm.
And I think it was, I'm not sure if he said it or someone else said it. It was probably the best that he'd seen his Villa side play since he'd been there. They were that good. Son obviously got a hat trick. We'll talk about those. And Kulusevski with the other one. But Hugo Lloris made some big saves in that first half. If you look at the breakdown of this, 4-0 to Spurs. Villa had 1.81 XG. Spurs had 1.22.
It's wild.
So wild.
Villa absolutely went at them. And this is the thing, like the way that Gerrard's got them playing and creating chances. This is also credit to Villa for their recruitment. They've signed really, really well. They've given him the pieces to perform. The problem for them, of course, is that Antonio Conte is the master at this performance, at drawing this thing. I mean, yes, they relied on the brilliance of Lloris in the first half, but the way that those three are already working in tandem up front, Kulusevski, Son and Kane.
So
Kulusevski
good.
Is
they
everything.
So good.
Everything I'd hoped he'd be. I thought he was, and I loved watching him in Italy. I've said this many times, he didn't get a fair shake at Juventus for various reasons. But that combination, again, they complement each other so well.
Mm.
Everyone does something slightly differently. And all three of them can act as playmakers, which is a huge asset. They're not just like roving wide forwards. Kulusevski can actually create the play, build the play, Sancho style. And we looked at this and there's this talk about this bad, I don't know where this myth of the bad January transfer window came through from Spurs, but
maybe it was a numbers thing, because I think the actual signings of those two were so good.
Bentancur and Kulusevski.
Yeah, they had a great window.
Unbelievable. Is this the first time Juventus have actually like dispensed the transfer bounty on any other club? But then you just look at this Spurs team and you look at it on paper, Ryan, it's like, it's brilliant. Like, I mean, Doherty is, there's always a more of a question mark over wing back than other parts of the team, but he's performed really well. It's the unit that works so well. You've got Dyer, Romero. That is a serious centre-back like configuration there.
Romero has been super impressive.
Well, he was probably statistically the best defender in Serie A the year before he moved. And you look now at this Spurs team and they're almost going to run out of road this season in terms of how far they could push into that top group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate for Arsenal, who we'll get to in a second. It's unfortunate for them that Arsenal's kind of reconfiguration, re-emergence has coincided with Conte finally pulling the pieces together. Because he has, hasn't he? I think he has.
Yeah, totally. I think in terms of Spurs, I think that they look like a Conte side now.
They do,
It took them a long while to figure it out.
Mm.
But also, he's got the best players playing at their level again, which I think they weren't before.
No, that's right.
The thing that was really impressive about this result, Spurs' ability to absorb pressure or navigate difficult periods of football matches is kind of back again.
Mm. Yes.
We'll talk about this with Manchester United and Arsenal as well. I think what both of those sides aren't doing at the moment are navigating difficult periods. It's too easy to score against Manchester United and Arsenal at the moment in the periods when the sides are, when their opposition are on top.
You pointed this out against Arsenal, about Arsenal against Brighton with the goal that was conceded to me and about the late run. And you were like...
Yeah, it's too easy to score against Arsenal at the moment and it's too easy to make life difficult for them. And for Spurs, Villa was so good in that first half. And yeah, you can say that the individualism of the goalkeeper kept them in it and it could have been very, very different. They didn't let that Villa momentum result in actually going behind. And they were just so clinical with their chances. Like the Kulusevski goal, you could probably argue that Mings could do better and Martinez could have done better in goal, because that is a tough, tough chance to put away. They're super efficient. Absorb the pressure, take the chances. And with this amount of games to go and a Northampton derby coming up in a few weeks as well, that is a very, very good headspace to be in, knowing that you can soak up that kind of pressure and hurt teams when you're maybe not playing at your absolute peak. Whereas for Manchester United and Arsenal, I think the opposite is true at the moment. I think they're having to work extremely hard to create chances and to score goals. They're a little bit too easy to score against, and they're not as good at absorbing pressure and navigating difficult periods of games as Spurs are currently.
Yeah. I think Heung-Min Son is still underrated.
Yeah, he's in there for Firmino's law.
He's in the underrated player group, I think, only because...
Do you know what though? I don't think he's underrated at all by Spurs fans. I think he's underrated by a number of neutrals, of course,
by Spurs fans, but beyond that, beyond the club, that move when he... Is it the goal he gets when he isolates two or three Villa players out on the right flank and then plays a pass infield and receives it and just takes them out of the game? Like first he... beautiful feet to get out of his feet down the right flank and just takes out two or three Villa players with a single pass in field to Kulusevski and receives the return, and just so elusive, just unbelievable. I think this is the thing now, the run-in is that Arsenal, and we'll get to them now actually against Brighton losing 2-1, they're making hard work of creation. I think that's the thing. And this is not to kind of, it's not like sort of Spurs versus Arsenal. I'm trying to sort of juxtapose them in that way. I'm just saying that you look at like United as well. Those teams make very, very hard work of chance creation and Spurs don't. And that's the thing that elevates you from being a mid-table Europa League team into the Champions League.
I mean, that may not necessarily mean that they're creating less chances necessarily, but I think they're having to work harder for those chances, and their execution of those chances when they arrive is... less damaging than Spurs.
Yeah. I think that's right.
They're struggling to hurt teams in the way that Spurs are managing to hurt teams at the moment.
Yes.
And I think you saw this in the Brighton game for Arsenal. Let's do Arsenal first and then we'll finish on Everton and Manchester United. But Brighton was so good in that first half. But arguably, I still think Arsenal could have and probably should have won the game. And this is my point. Arsenal had some really, really good opportunities, created quite a lot actually. But they were just too soft on the other end. You need to be the two goals that Arsenal conceded, for example, came from extremely poorly tracked runners.
Yeah.
One from Xhaka on the left-hand side, and then that midfield run from Trossard.
Yes.
Who just kind of
walked into that space.
Slightly different, but it reminded me a little bit of the Arshavin goal against Barcelona.
That's exactly the same. Exactly the same.
Because it was that you could see it happening a mile away.
Same angle, same depth, same arrival. But then I think Barcelona in that game had just been so pulled out of shape.
For that moment.
But it was
one of those where it was like, yeah, there were some really, really clear, identifiable Arsenal errors that led to that goal, but it was also an extremely well executed goal, much like the second one actually, second Brighton goal, which was lovely, really lovely goal. So again, it was one of those that I think Arsenal had the chances to win the game, but I don't think they deserve to win the game.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
It's bittersweet for Graham Potter because he lost the XG battle, but he won the game, so.
You can imagine, it's that meme, isn't it? I've won, but at what cost?
Yeah, exactly. But Brighton's run of form going into this game had been quite patchy. They had a winless run since the 12th of February. They've got Spurs next, and it would not surprise me if Spurs put them away. That's no disrespect to Brighton at all. That's just more with the kind of comparison between Arsenal and Spurs currently. I think Spurs look, like we say, they look a little bit more complete. There are caveats there for Arsenal in terms of the lack of squad depth. It was going to come back to bite Arsenal at some point through the season.
Yes, and this is unfortunate. People said this, didn't they?
And this is it. And Arteta is now struggling to figure out a formula with the personnel available, because Tierney's out for the rest of the season. It looks like Partey will be out till May. He's got to come up with a solution quick, because he's got Man United on the horizon. He's got a North London derby to deal with. These are big, big games. However, that's why I think it's still too close to call for who's going to finish in that fourth spot, because points are going to be won between those three.
Yeah, they're still in it. Arsenal's still in this for sure.
Taking my Arsenal hat off really pleased for Brighton because they had, like I say, they had been in this really, really patchy run of form. They were never in danger of getting dragged into that relegation battle, I don't think. Mm. But still, just a good one to chalk up for them. There was a little bit of a confusion with Arsenal with the Martinelli disallowed goal.
It was the right decision, but my God, how unlucky do you have to be offside that close to the goal line?
When you're that close to the goal, there should be like an offside amnesty.
Yeah, it should be. It shouldn't be legal.
People should just say, fuck it. Fuck it. No.
But can I say, actually, before I forget, on the race for the Champions League, obviously West Ham is still in contention. And so are Manchester United, although this defeat, the frustrating thing about this defeat from Manchester United's perspective is, like, these were points they really needed. This is not a performance you put in where you really need points. Like it just isn't. And it's a slightly baffling. And there was a grim episode at the end when Cristiano Ronaldo was allegedly.
We saw it.
Yeah, was seen to have slapped a phone away as he walked off.
It's such weird behaviour.
It was a bizarre.
The whole thing was weird.
It was very, very weird. And it rounded off an extremely strange performance in Manchester United and a bad day for them. But again, credit to Everton. And here's the thing as well. Like we criticised Frank Lampard on the previous podcast in terms of his, I think, demeanour, the language he used, much more upbeat here. And just
much more.
But yeah. also,
the credit to Lampard. Like, yes.
Thank you.
The team selection here was really, really good and worked.
Who did Fabian Delph, who excelled under Guardiola, could do a job here. And I know that like there's more to it than that. I'm sure that Everton fans will come back and say, actually, like he's been poor in many respects. But I think he is a player who's proven that if you've got a really good tactical plan, he can give you something different and special. Going with Delph and Allen in midfield here just gives you that solidity. You've got some nous there. You have some experience. Gordon was excellent. Iwobi,
brilliant.
A bit happier in that pocket there. And Richarlison just allowed to roam. And then using Calvert-Lewin as a fixed point. That's a configuration I really like for Everton.
I thought there was, again, like we talked about the Chelsea reaction. This was such a reaction from Everton.
Yeah.
And they did extremely well. They soaked up quite a lot of Manchester United pressure. But for that, Manchester United didn't create a huge amount of glaringly big chances. Again, Jordan Pickford made some really good saves.
You know, the weird thing is, here's a funny thing with Pickford. I feel like Pickford's better form came when he was off the radar. So like, it's almost like his early parts of his career, the chaos was greater than the later part. And I think his reputation, he's still suffering slightly from some of the chaos of the earlier moments. Because throughout the Euros, he'd ironed out a lot of those challenges. He wasn't that keeper in the Euros. He was really like solid. And I think what's interesting about Pickford is he's had to play behind a pretty rapidly rotating cast of defenders. Mason Holgate was in central midfield in the last game, and now he's on the bench here, and that's not Holgate's fault at all. He's a defender. So I slightly worry going forward. I mean, Everton should still have enough to stay up. They should.
Yeah, they have the quality to stay up.
They have the quality. But I'm more concerned, I suppose, about them going forward, whatever division they end up in. I'm just concerned about like how some of those players are used.
We should definitely bank that for what happens at the end of the season because there needs to be a big debrief about a number of teams this season because there are so many, like the upcoming summer transfer window, for example, and just the summer in general is going to be so key for so many Premier League teams. Everton are absolutely one of them.
Yes.
From this game in isolation, I'm really pleased from an Everton point of view that they got a big win after a difficult week. And obviously Burnley's defeat to Norwich means that Burnley result was kind of just a bit of a, in terms of a fixture, it's almost been wiped off.
Burnley should be really disappointed with that because they had a really good chance to equalise.
Massively disappointed.
They should have done a lot better than that. And coming off the back of that strong performance against Everton, the momentum should have carried them a bit further. So yeah, slight. But then again, Everton are fighting, Norwich are fighting for their lives. So.
Anything more to say about Manchester United that we haven't already said before? After
I don't think so. No.
Should we save it for the deep dive later in the season?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fine, as you were.
So yeah, the race for the top four is Spurs are in fourth place, 57 points, haven't played 31, with a far superior goal difference to Arsenal now, who are 3 points behind. Obviously, West Ham on 51 points, haven't played 32 games. Manchester United also on 51 points, haven't played 31. But then you've got Wolves, who are only a couple of points behind that as well. So there are still many twists and turns for the end of the season, no doubt.
There are indeed.
Always been big Premier League heavy today. Anything else you want to shout out quickly before we...
Just very quickly, Union Berlin beating Hertha 4-1 in the derby. That.
I would not want to be a Hertha player in training yesterday or today.
There were some slightly grim scenes at the end. The ultras were telling Hertha players to take their shirts off because they didn't represent the fans properly, which I thought was really, that's tough on Hertha players. You know, you're not going out there trying to get absolutely hammered. And it was an amazing atmosphere at the Olympiastadion, but Union were loud. Like, Hertha fans were loud, credit to them for that game, but the Union fans were really going after it. But yeah, I think just to say in that, like, they've done really well in the derby against Hertha. But I think we've said this before, Urs Fischer's coaching of Union Berlin continues to be one of the marvels of the top divisions in Europe, really is.
Yeah, they had those back-to-back poor results against Hertha when they lost 4-0 and 3-1. But other than that, they're undefeated in the derby since there. But that relegation fight isn't over. One or two results either way can really, really turn that around. You got Hertha, Arminia Bielefeld, both on 26 points, and then Stuttgart are only on 27. So you've got three sides battling to avoid the automatic relegation spot. And then for those who don't know, 16th place in the Bundesliga goes into a playoff against the third place side in the Zweite Bundesliga. So yeah, quick shout to Dortmund, who beat Stuttgart on Friday night, but we saw Gio Reyna go off in tears with another injury, which was such a shame for him. He's only just recently come back, and we hope that that's nothing too serious. I think it's a hamstring. Mm-hmm. That was really sad to see.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So early in the game as well. But Julian Brandt came on for Gio Reyna and got both goals for Dortmund. Let's quickly talk about La Liga because...
Yes.
Just very, very, very quickly. Yeah, very quickly. Because Atleti lost to Mallorca on Saturday, which was a huge result for Mallorca. They're obviously battling to avoid the drop, and they're out the relegation zone now, thanks to that result and Cadiz's defeat to Betis, Real Madrid beating Getafe 2-0 on Saturday night, but then Barcelona beating Levante 3-2 after being 1-0 down and then going 2-1 up, conceding an equaliser. They had three penalties against them in this game, Barcelona. Two of them were scored, one of them was saved by Marc-Andre ter Stegen, and then Luke de Jong in the second minute of stoppage time coming up with the goods again late in the game for Barcelona. He's been a really, really handy player for them this season.
Some amazing stat was that Colin Miller posted, said like of the five goals that have been scored by Barcelona in the last 10 minutes, four have come from Luke de Jong under Xavi.
Yeah, he's been responsible for so many points for them.
Do you know what I love about this squad? This squad is like, it's a happy squad, first of all, but everyone is happy to contribute their part.
Mm.
The lovely
Gavi to Pedri
link up. Yes.
Wow.
Those two. They've had, you know, they need a children's book. The Adventures of Gavi and Pedri.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I need to write that. I should pitch that and write that.
Oh dear. Quickly in Serie A, Atalanta lost to Sassuolo. Napoli lost at home to Fiorentina. Milan drew away to Torino.
Bad loss for
Inter.
Napoli.
Inter beat Hellas Verona, which means that they are 2 points off Milan at the top with a game in hand. So the title is now back in Inter's hands.
For this week at least. Yeah.
Let's leave it for there today.
Let's do it.
Don't forget, Righty's House will be up on Wednesday with Jill Roard, Ian and Flo talking to Jill Roard and talking about Leah Williamson's England captaincy. We'll be back on Thursday with the Champions League stuff. Don't forget to check theringer.com and theringer.com/soccer and the Stadio Outros playlist on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out on Molecular Memories from Kasim Moss. Anything you want to add, Musa Okwonga?
Nothing further. I'm good.
Really? Nothing at all? It's been a while, I think.
I've matured.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
Have you?
It's growth. It's growth, Ryan. Embrace it.
Is it? Is it? All right then. Much love, everyone. Stay safe, stay well, and we'll be back on Thursday.
See you then.